Oh, hello there. Hey, guys. Scott Brennan here, you there, and I want to talk to you real quick about a couple sponsors that make this podcast awesome. We love to support small business entrepreneurs, small companies, so these sponsors are very near and dear to our hearts. Trivia Revolution, they sponsor the podcast. I also work for them. They are a trivia company all over the state of New Jersey, many different bars. Come out and play some trivia that's fueled by craft beer. What I mean by this is every week there's a featured brewery that you can win prizes to, even if you're in last place. Each week they give away prizes either to that bar, okay, all different types of breweries like Manskirt and Demented and Zigmeister and all these great New Jersey craft beers. So come on out, Trivia Revolution. Look for the bonus item on Instagram or Facebook and earn points for your team. Speaking of beer, how do I forget Demented Brewing Company located in Middlesex, New Jersey? Every week, they got something new going on in their tap house, 16 tap handles, just all sorts of things. I know right now they have my favorite beer there, is their Kiwi IPA. It is delicious. Join their bottle club. Look for all different things that are going on with that brewery. Check them out at dementedbrewing.com. They're awesome. Go check out the mural in there, too. It's really cool. Manskirt Brewing, which you will hear us at next week. Manskirt Brewing is located in Hackettstown, New Jersey, becoming like the beer mecca of New Jersey, but located in an old bank building, really cool. I was there the other day sampling their stuff. They got all different seasonally inspired beer. Go check out Joe and his Manskirt. Yes, his leathery kilt, and you'll hear all about that next week, but check him out at Manskirt Brewing. Say hi. Go say hi to Joe Fisher. Finally, our longest sponsor, Wolf Nation, WULF Nation. What that means, wake up, live free, okay? You know, basically making your own way, okay? You know, maybe doing a podcast, doing your art, filming a movie, doing whatever it is that gets you off of the man's paycheck, living week to week. That's inspired apparel, Wolf Nation, that's what it is. So check them out, Wolf Nation at Twitter, Wolf Nation Instagram, WULF, Wake Up, Live Free. Look for some awesome designs coming out on that, clothes for men, women, and children, dogs, grandmas, all that fun stuff. So with that, take a listen to this episode. We got two guests. I also have another bout with bear news at the end, so tune in for that. But we got two guests from Z Nation. We have... Keith Allen, okay, really good interview. And then a fellow comic joins me. He's got an album coming out, Mr. Glenn Tickle. So tune in, two really good guests, and have a listen.
Hey, this is Adrian Hayes. I'm an adventurer, a speaker, a business coach, a rock band singer, and a few more things. You're listening to Verbal Shenanigans.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Never even... You recording that?
No.
Oh, okay. I forget the rest. What the hell was the rest of it?
I don't know. Start from the top.
All right, Hickory Dickory Dock. The mouse went up the clock. I don't even remember that one. God damn it.
This could inspire a new bit.
Berlew, finish this line.
Why am I getting so much fucking feedback? It's like when your mic goes to a certain point,
it's like, it picks up everything. It picks up, like, the neighbor down the street. But I think we're locked in here, actually.
I think we're good.
How's your headphones?
My headphones are good.
Gotta bring mine up.
Somebody just
bit.
Messaged you.
Yeah, that might be one of our guests.
Yeah, right. I think we're good. Let's hit it.
Okay. Mike Berlew, Hickory Dickory Dock. Yep. Shenanigans is on the clock.
Oh.
The clock struck one. I pulled out my gun and blew my co-host down the block. Hey, ho, hey, the Dice Man's here. The Dice Man.
That don't sound like a really childrenly type of nursery rhyme.
Andrew Dice Clay made a living off of not childrenly or whatever word you just used.
Yeah. If you can't make up the same words that I do, don't use them, Scott.
Do you realize how big Andrew Dice Clay was? Like,
oh, yeah.
He
overtook Eddie Murphy. I think Eddie Murphy was like the number one comedian at the time.
Yeah, he was like, he wasn't just like a comedy act. He was like, he was different than comedy acts because he was like
a character.
Yeah, but you requested that. Like, you know, like if you were to see, I don't know, Louis C.K., like you saw him today, you heard his album, you want to go see like new stuff by him.
Mm-hmm.
Like you'd be like, oh, I can't wait to hear some of his new shit.
Yeah,
there, like him,
it's like do the classic,
do it, you know, like, which is amazing because that can consistently would bring people back to see him. You know, like do the nursery rhyme. Like he was, I mean, like Kevin Hart's the only guy touching that kind of status right now.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of funny. I remember watching Man on the Moon and Andy Kaufman. That's what got him out of comedy for the most part. Like he got it. He was almost like an anti-comedian, you know? Mm-hmm. He was just doing stuff just to weird people out, and then it got popular.
I saw the best meme ever. Did you see it? It was Donald Trump unzipping himself and Andy Kaufman popping out. The best thing. It was.
Like, I didn't see that.
Oh,
no.
So funny.
But
that's brilliant.
But when he got big on Taxi, and he would go out to colleges, and he would want to do his like silly
you
things.
You sound good now.
Yeah, okay.
Before, but it was like picking up, like, if someone was in the bathroom,
mm-hmm. Okay.
The zipper up.
Yeah, but he went to, like, colleges, wanted to do his thing. He's like, oh, we're going to tell nursery rhymes, we're going to have fun, blah, 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 blah. And then people would just start yelling at the offense, do the guy from Taxi, do the guy from Taxi. And he would get so pissed off with it, he just gave up on that.
Well, it's like what they said Chappelle, like, even though he denies it, they said every time he was performing, he was like, I'm Rick James, bitch, like, in the crowd. Like, he's like, really? Mm-hmm. Like, that's my show. I've been a stand-up forever, and then, like, a killer stand-up, you know?
Yeah.
I saw Chappelle twice. One, like, a couple years ago at the Oddball Festival, but one, like, in his prime, like, my ex-girlfriend, before I was even married, got me tickets, and we went somewhere in, like, Connecticut. It was, like, a two-hour drive. He was unbelievable, man. That guy is unreal.
Mm. Somewhere is your girl saying, you were married and you had a girlfriend before you were married?
Yes. But
need to talk.
That was a long, roundabout version of Welcome Back to the Verbal Shenanigans podcast.
Oh, yeah. We forgot to... Yeah, welcome.
Yeah, I don't like the intro thing. I'm not even doing it anymore. No. I'm just going to...
We're just going to get right into a conversation.
I'm just going to start it. I hate the how are you doing bullshit. But episode 114.
Ooh.
Climbing. Numbers aren't climbing, but we're climbing. fun episode last week. If you listen to a buddy of mine, Andy Rivera, DJ. And, it was pretty funny because one of the guys messaged me today like that we were talking about. He's like, oh, my God, I remember those... freestyle battles we used to have in the backyard. I'm like, see, I don't lie. Like, you know, it's funny, but
epic rap battles of history.
Yeah. All right. So we might as well get our first guest on.
Yeah, we should.
Let's go to the first guest. We got two guests planned today. Well, we had another guest planned, but hopefully we get on. I do want to talk to him, the guy from Taser Ball.
Yeah, it was between the guy who's on the sci-fi show that has millions of fans and Taser Ball, and the sci-fi guy shows up.
Yeah. So here was our interview with Keith Allen.
Keith Allen, a.k.a. The Murphy on Sci-Fi's Z Nation.
Yep. So here's a listen. Give it a listen. And he was a very cool guy and a good interview. So here's Keith Allen. Hello. Hey, is this Keith Allen? How are you?
It is indeed. How you doing?
All right, man. I am Scott Brennan. This is my buddy Michael Berlew.
Howdy, Keith.
Hey, guys. How you doing? I completely forgot about this. So
that's all right.
Most of our listeners do too.
Yeah, most people forget about us. That's all right.
Yeah. So I'm a little on the fly here.
Where are you calling us from?
The dollar store parking lot.
Oh.
Keep it classy, Keith. Keep it classy.
Yeah, right?
I see that Hollywood money's really putting you in a good life.
Yeah, well, you know, we don't have Walking Dead money, you know what I'm saying?
Out of curiosity, like, do you get that a lot? Do, like, people always compare you guys to The Walking Dead all the time and have to deal with that stuff?
You know, it's getting less and less. You know, now that people know the show and see the show, those comparisons are much fewer and further between, because they know that they realized early on that we weren't trying to be The Walking Dead. And so now we are accepted for who we are, you know. And
well, it's 2016, Keith. Come on.
Exactly. Come on. Everyone has a place in this world.
Yeah. First it was transgenders. Now Z Nation's finally got their spot.
Right. Yeah. We're going to need our own bathroom, though.
A little zombie bathroom coming up.
Yeah, we need a zombie bathroom. You know, that's all I'm saying. That's very
probably smells better than most male bathrooms. But are you on a phone? Because you sound like you're like right in the room right now. You sound good.
I'm on my phone. Yeah, I'm on my phone.
That Z Nation money phone is working good.
Yeah.
But so tell us a little bit about the show. How long has the show been on? How'd you get involved in it? You know, like tell us the beginning of this.
All right.
Thing.
This my story.
Your story.
Well, the Asylum, the Global Asylum, they are the ones that are the producing the show, and it was their idea to foray into television.
For a second, I thought you were going to be like, I was in the Asylum, and they reached out to me.
Yeah, it just started off as a workshop, you know, basically. In the Asylum.
I didn't take my medicine one day.
And, right. No, the Asylum now. Many of you know Asylum from Sharknado, which is opening this week. Actually, Sharknado 4 is opening this week. But you know, they've done many, many films, over 100 films, and you know, they're usually mockbusters or you know, just they are so out of the box. You know, Radioactive Crab and stuff. You know, I can't think of my mouth in the movie, but that's the kind of movies they do. And so, but they decided that they wanted to break into the television world. So that was a couple of years ago, and I happened to be working at the Asylum. I mean, I've been an actor many, many years, but you know, sometimes you ain't making no money. So so I had a day job, and my day job was at the Asylum. I was their office manager there, or stage manager. Basically, I made sure that the buildings ran, you know, the toilets weren't overflowing, or, you know, there wasn't vomit stuck to the front door and stuff like that, which tended to happen because we're right down the street from a Barney's. And they were really so great to me. They let me, you know, audition for some of their films. And so I've been acting in a few of their films, and I got a chance to write and direct my first feature with them, which was 11-11-11. And I wound up writing about three other scripts for them, for sci-fi, a couple of zombie movies, and a movie for Lifetime called Social Nightmare. And so anyhow, they knew me very well and knew that what I was capable of, I guess, to some degree. And so when they decided to make a zombie show, they're like, we want you to audition. I'm like, hell yeah. So I auditioned and auditioned and auditioned. I probably auditioned for the role about 7 times. And lo and behold, I got the job. So, I got the job on a Friday, and I was up in Spokane shooting by Monday. So it was very quick, very fast. And then, you know, I was just sort of thrown into it, and I didn't know much about it. I knew it was a zombie show, but that was about the extent of it. So it was kind of a lot of figuring out as you go along. And so but right now we're in our third season. We're about midway shooting our third season up here in Spokane once again. And, yeah, we are the crazy offbeat, you know, zombie show. We aren't The Walking Dead, that's for sure. You know, we're definitely a lighter, funner, you know, version of The Walking Dead.
Now, you have done. I mean, I've kind of told people your show can be a lot of tongue in cheek, but they had some like more serious tones before. Like one of my favorites is the White Light episode where they go to each character, and it's acting like they're going to die, and then eventually Matt got killed off in the end. Which side do you prefer? Do you like the series, the comedy? Where you lean towards?
You know, as an actor, I have to say I love it both. I really do. I mean, it's really ideal for me to get to play in both worlds, to get to, you know, have a really heavy, poignant moment. And then, you know, and then just a stupid goof, you know, sticky bit. You know, I love that as an actor. That's kind of what you live for, is that sort of variety, to play in both of those worlds. And so so I cannot choose one or the other. I really can't, because they both satisfy me, you know, in different ways. And you know, these people that I'm working with, they're so fun to play with and play against, you know. So I have so much fun sort of figuring out, and we're really great about working bits. You know, we're like, that's not funny enough. How do we make it funnier? How do we, you know, Russell and I will do that quite a bit. Russell can play Doc on the show. We figure out how to milk the shit out of these bits, you know? So anyhow, and that's just fun. You're getting to be creative. And fortunately our writers, Carl Schaefer, who's the showrunner, he's very giving when it comes to letting us play around a little bit with his ideas and dialogue. You know, he sort of trusts us in that way. Yes, as foolish as that may be, he does. And so, so in that sense, we really get to contribute to the show in a lot more ways than I'm sure many, many other shows you would never get a chance to do that.
Keith, like, what do you think has captured, not even America, the world's interest with zombies? Like, what do you think it is that is this timeless kind of thing that's been redone, spit back out, changed,
right.
But it still has this, you know, there's an underlying thing, but it's always right. Different interpretations of it. What right. do you think it is that captures people's imaginations about that?
You know, I kind of think, and I've thought about this, I think part of it is that, you know, it's always nice in a movie to have the people you hate, the villain you hate, you know, and zombies are easy to lump together. Everyone can find something that they hate about zombies. You know, they want to eat your brains. So, you know, it's easy for us. It's easy for us to group together and say, yes, they are all the bad guys. They really don't have any redeeming qualities, you know. Zombies don't. And so it's easy for us collectively as a society to go, okay, we know what team we're on.
So you read right into the zombie propaganda. You don't think they have feelings or any right to live.
Republican.
Now, you know, I think, now I don't subscribe to that. I, especially as my character, I don't. I think Murphy is the one who is saying, wait a minute. Let's back this up again. I think you guys are jumping to conclusions without really analyzing the situation. And I think that's one thing that makes my character interesting is that,
right.
you know, he's in a advantaged place to look at these zombies in a completely different light because he is part one. And so because I have the zombie virus running through my veins and I have a certain connection with them, I am the voice of reason saying, wait a minute, I think you people are, you know, jumping to conclusions and judging these people based on, you know, simply what you think you know. And so I think that's one of the things that makes my character very interesting is that he's giving us insight into what it means to be a zombie that we haven't seen before.
About how long does it take to shoot an episode from beginning to end with all the CGI and everything?
Well, you know, it depends on what how much money they're willing to spend. You know, and I tell you, last season we were doing episodes. It took us about 6 days. We were 6 days an episode. This year we're doing many 5-day episodes. And to give you a sense, in the real world, these episodes would be 9 days to shoot. So we are moving very, very quickly, you know, which is it's very difficult. It's really hard work to begin with, and then to do it at double speed, it's extremely difficult, and you have to really be on your toes. And there's not a lot of you know, dilly dallying with our show. You kind of got to get to it because the more time you suck up, that's the less takes you get. and we only get maybe two takes on a shot, and then they're moving on, you know? So to give you a sense of like a regular television show, they would shoot maybe 4 pages a day. We do 12, yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
So we keep it moving. So and that's just partially has to do with our budget, you know, because we don't have the money that a big studio would have. You know, we have to get it done. And then the CGI, that's a whole different thing. I mean, that's just from my end. I'm not sure how long the CGI stuff is, because I think that's all different, and it's certainly not my world. But, you know, that's all done in post. So I would say probably we shoot, you know, 5-6 days, and then there's the editing, and then there's the sound and the CGI. I would say probably a month to do each episode from beginning to end, something like that.
So Keith, like, do you think like the campiness of your show, or the exaggeration, whatever you want to call it, of the show, is what keeps you guys on? Because you do have a show, obviously on AMC, The Walking Dead, like bang, right. Everyone's like, where you would almost think there's no room for two zombie shows, no way,
sure, yeah.
No way. But do you think that's what it is? It's the fun of it, it's the lightheartedness, but yet. You're finding, obviously, who's ever producing it or directing it is finding a way to combine, because that campiness can only last so long. Like, oh, sure. Ha 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 ha.
You're
finding a way to weave a real story into that.
Right.
Do you think that's what sets you apart from like a show like The Walking Dead or?
I think there's a couple of things. I think that is certainly one. I hear that from our fans all the time, is that, you know, they love the humor. And they love that it's not such a heavy, heavy show, that it's, you know, that it does have a sense of humor about itself. And so I know certainly that that's one thing the fans are drawn to. Even Walking Dead fans, you know, they say, you know, and diehard Walking Dead fans, might I add, you know, they come to our show because we are offering, you know, a lighter, funner version. But on top of that, I think it's also, one, the relationships that we formed with these characters. People want to know what's going to happen between them and how they are going to get through this. And you know, I think that's with any good drama. You know, that's key, that you've got to have people you care about and that you're invested in. And I think the other thing that really sets us apart is that we... which I think is a really smart thing they're doing, is that we have a mission. We got someplace we got to be. We got something we got to do. And so from the very get-go, that just moves your show forward every day, because, you know, you're challenged to get to the, you know, that point, to the end line. And so it's not about just surviving. We got something to do. We got things to accomplish. So I think that really, really sets us apart also, is that we got a goal.
Now, your character, I love the sarcasm in him. Is that inside of you, or did you have to, is that acting, or you just showed up and like, yeah, he's a dick?
Well, no, that is, I certainly have that in me, yes. I really do have a bit of a snarky sense of humor, that is for sure. I mean, I'm turning it up here. Let's say I don't go through life just insulting people, you know. I'm a lovely man. Yeah, certainly Murphy has got much more of a snide attitude about him. But yeah, that certainly was part of who I am, sure.
I got a question for you. So with the success of the show and knowing that it's like a low budget kind of thing, does everyone on cast rally around that, or is it like some of you, is it like a split thing, or is everyone working as like one team to kind of deliver the show, or is it like, you know, some people think it's bigger than it is, or it's different than it is? Like, I love the low budget aspect to it, and
right.
the combination between campy and real storyline is what's cool about it. I think that's the draw to it. You guys embrace that?
Yeah. You know, I think we all are. We're quite aware of what we signed on for. You know, there was really no illusion about you know, what this show was. Now, whether or not it was going to work, that was a big question in the beginning, because, you know, that's always questionable when you're doing something on the cheap. Is it going to just look cheap and, you know, and be ridiculous. And, you know, and that's was a possibility, because if you've seen some of the Asylum films, and I say this with all love and respect, you know, some of their films look really cheap. And but, you know, this show it came out differently. It certainly has a much better quality than I think most of their films. And the writing, I think, is stronger than anything in the film. So, yeah, but I think we all knew what we signed on for. And so we certainly, I mean, we go when we're having a hard day, we'll go up and, you know, just give a little hug, because you need it, you know, when you're running through another abandoned filled building with spiky things pointing at you and God knows what kind of mystery powder you're falling into and stuff like that. It ain't a glamorous job, that's for sure. And so, but we are there to, you know, keep lifting each other up and dusting ourselves off, you know, as you would in the apocalypse. I would say that possibly some of our guest stars don't quite know what they've signed up for when they get on the show. You know, they would come on the show and they're used to being treated a certain way. And, you know, they come on our show and they're not used to working like as fast as we do. And you know, we got to move. We don't have time for, you know, star bullshit. So there were a couple of instances where I just think they were ill prepared for what they signed on for. But the cast itself, you know, we're pros, man. We get in there and we do the job.
So that explains why you killed off the dude from Lost in the first episode, huh?
Gone. No, we killed him off because we couldn't afford him. He was awesome. Harold was great. He was so great. But I'll tell you a funny story about Harold, though. And I'd never worked with him before. And the first scene in the show, where I appear, we're in a canoe and we're riding across this lake and up to the camp. And they wanted us to be like in the middle of the lake and come towards camera. And so we get in the canoe and I tell Harold, I'm like, I'm not paddling. And he goes, what? And I'm like, I'm not paddling. I said, I'm your prisoner. Why would I paddle? I'm not here because by any choice. And then besides, I'm sick. You paddle. He's like, well, okay. All right. He gets in that canoe and paddles, and that he could not paddle in a straight line to save his life. We were out on that canoe for 45 minutes in the little lake doing zigzag, circle, circle, zigzag back.
God, finally, how hard is it to paddle a canoe?
Well, he's on the island of Lost. I mean, that's why he stayed there.
Yeah, that's why they're lost. Oh, all retards, God, who can't get off the island.
I can't paddle! We finally, just did a circle.
I had to give in finally. I'm like, oh, for Christ's sake. It was getting dark. We're losing sunlight. I had. I'm like, all right, I'll paddle. Jesus, all right.
That's funny. That's awesome.
Yeah, his manhood was hurt a little bit that day, but he got over it.
Now,
great guy. Super great. He was a ton of fun to work with.
Now, we got a couple of fan questions. Before I get to that, I have to ask you one thing. I was looking at your IMDb, and apparently one of your first acting jobs ever was working with Meatloaf as Tim Curry.
Well, yes. No, I did not get to work with Meatloaf, sadly. This was a biopic. It was a VH1 biopic called Meatloaf to Hell and Back. And so, yeah, there was another actor who played Meatloaf. So sadly, I did not get to work with him. But luckily, I did get to play Tim Curry as Frankenfurter in the Meatloaf story to Hell and Back. So, yeah, there's pictures of me floating around somewhere in my, you know, fishnets and high heels. And, you know, I look pretty good, I have to say. But
Debatable.
I'm going to send you that picture, my friend.
Please do. We'll put it on. Well, when this episode comes out, we'll put it up.
So that was a great gig. I had one line in it. This is my line. You want to hear it? This is my
scene. Okay. And right. Scene.
These heels are killing me.
That's pretty damn good.
Thank you.
That's pretty damn good.
Wow.
Now do Tim Curry and Clue.
I don't know. No, I can't.
All right.
So we have
another. All right, let me give you a couple of rapid fire questions. Some fans asked us to ask you. Do you prefer acting or writing?
Really cool show.
Well, you know, I would say that I prefer acting because writing is relatively new to me. But that being said, I really do enjoy it when I am knee deep in it. You know, it's kind of fun, and it's sort of a new world for me to kind of to create a world. You know, when you are writing, you get to build the world and think up, you know, circumstances that you would want to see in a movie. So it's kind of exciting. And I really love working with a writing partner because it's, you know, it's just such a collaboration to bounce ideas off. And then you argue about what's going to be better. And then out of that argument comes something even better than what you were both thinking of. And so I really enjoy it a lot. But acting, I have to say, is my first love. I've been doing it for years and years.
Awesome. Which episode was your favorite to film and why?
I think that my favorite episode was in season one when I proclaimed to be the Messiah. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you remember this, but I'm in the cage with Messiah.
Yep.
Because it was really the first time that we see Murphy as a strong character. You know, he's such a wilting, you know, quivering flower before that. And this is the first time where we see him really be strong and take a stand. And, you know, it's hints of where he's going to be in the future. And so it was such a transitional scene for Murphy in that. And it was such fun dialogue for me to say. So that was definitely one of my favorites.
Somebody's asking, there was rumors that you weren't coming back for season three. They want to be assured that that's just some false stories here.
Oh no, I'm working. I just happen to have the day off, but yeah, I'm knee deep in it. Yep, I'm here.
And this is going to be a very hard question. What is it like to play Murphy?
Thrilling. It's it's great. I mean, he's a super fun character. One because he's got a lot of sides to him. You know, he's can be just a total asshole. And very self-centered. And then, you know, next thing you know, he's all mushy and soft and squishy. And, you know, he feels for, you know, these zombies. And so, and then he'll just do something just awful. You know, like when he took the food from the dying family, you know, horrible. And then, and people love to hate him. They love to hate him. And then he'll do something like go back and save his people and give them the food. And that's that little bit of redemption that people are like, ah. I wanted to hate you, but you saved your people, so I couldn't quite do it, you know? Mm-hmm. So,
That's awesome.
So it's those variations on a character that make it so much fun to play that you never quite know what he's going to do. And also what's great about him is I kind of have a bit of freedom to go anywhere I want to with him because he's something we've never seen before. We've never seen a half zombie, half human. So, so he's evolving and changing all the time. And so I'm certainly not the same man I was in season one that I am in season three. And that's thrilling for an actor to just sort of, you know, figure out where you want to go along with the writers and show creators. Like, what is this guy going to be this season? What are his strengths? What are his goals now? You know? And so that's fun because he's always changing. I'm not the same guy all the time.
Okay, so you're in the dollar store, right? You're in the dollar store.
You have to pick. I'm outside, but yes.
No, but you're there. The zombie apocalypse is happening outside. You got to pick two or three items from the dollar store to defend yourself.
Uh-huh. Right.
What are they?
I'm going to go with the kitchen knives. They've got a lot of those.
For $1? Because I could use a new one.
Yeah, I had to get one, so yes, I know that they have kitchen knives.
So, you might want to grab a couple since it's a dollar store.
Right.
Yeah, and wear gloves while cutting a chicken.
Right. I'm going to say kitchen knives, and then maybe aerosol can hairspray and a lighter.
Solid. Solid.
You know what I'm, you know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
All right, good. Yeah.
Whole food thing, that'll just happen on its own.
The whole food thing? Food thing, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, as you're playing this role... Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I don't eat food from the dollar store. Candy, maybe, but...
Sure you don't. We all say that.
That could be a good point. Canned food from the dollar store. I'm not sure. I'd probably rather starve.
Yeah, it's questionable.
So, I mean, the show's really taking a lot of places. What's on the horizon for you? What kind of stuff are you looking more to do towards the future, whether it be with the Asylum or your acting or your screenwriting?
Right. Well, I'm writing a couple of pieces right now that are, you know, floating around in my mind and making it halfway on the paper right now. So I'm toying with that. But I have a project that I'm very excited about that I'm looking forward to get back to once our season wraps. But if you can go on my website, which is KeithAllenActor.com, and go under upcoming projects. There's a play that I did in Los Angeles a couple of years ago called Hearts Like Fists. And it is a graphic novel, dark comedy, about crime fighters who are nurses by day and crime fighters by night, and the evil supervillain Dr. X, who goes around murdering people in their sleep because they love. You know, he hates lovers, so he kills them.
Why is X such a badass letter? Why isn't like Dr. T? You know,
what happened to letter Q? Come on,
X is so popular.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I love it too. I don't know. X-rated, maybe? Maybe there's that sort of...
Well, there's already a Dr. J, so we can't take that.
Right.
Master
P.
So, anyhow, this is a piece, and I actually filmed the opening sequence, too. So I made basically a little 7-minute movie to sort of show people about what my vision would be like. And I'm really proud of it. It's really cool, really dark and bizarre and weird, but it's got a gorgeous look to it. Alex Yellen, who's our DP on Z Nation, who also worked with me on 11-11-11, he helped me shoot it, and he's got such a great eye. And so anyhow, I'm looking forward to trying to find some money to make that happen, because I think it's a really fun script, and you know, I think I have a good eye to really make it, bring it to life. So check it out.
That's awesome. And when does the next season of Z Nation come out?
I'm hearing now that it's September 23rd is when it will air on Sci-Fi.
Getting close.
However, I'm not sure I'm supposed to say this, but who cares?
You have to next Monday to tell us.
I understand that our first episode... It's going to be a 2-hour-long episode, so it's basically like a little self-contained movie within itself, and it's supposed to be fantastic. I haven't seen it yet, but it's supposed to be great, and it is. It's going to have a whole different feel within itself. Abram Cox is the director who directed, and he's directed some of our best episodes. Has a really good eye, and what they're going to do is, I think they're going to release it in movie theaters for at least a couple of nights all across the country, I believe through Fathom Events, which Fathom Events does all these, you know, special screenings, anniversary screenings and stuff like that. So that'll be exciting for us, because people will be able to go see it on a big screen. And that'll happen, I think, a week or two before it airs on Sci-Fi in September, something like that. So it's something cool they're trying to do to maybe, you know, get a more of an audience out to see the movie.
That's awesome. Yeah. So if people want to say hello or see what's going on with you or send you a message, mm-hmm. where can they go? Check out what's going on with Keith Allen.
Yeah. So, again, my website is KeithAllenActor.com. And on Twitter and Instagram, I'm Keith Allen Duh. So it's Keith, A-L-L-A-N-D-U-H, Duh.
All right.
So hit me up there. And then we're also doing what's awesome, and one of the great perks of having this job is that we're invited to many of these Comic-Cons and Walker Stalker events. So, you know, we get to go and, you know, meet our fans and sign autographs and do all that jazz. So, you know, we've got one coming up in Louisville this next weekend. So that's awesome. I mean, we get to really, it's so cool to be able to meet face to face with these fans and, you know, get all that love. So good.
Well, what's the craziest thing a fan ever asked or done at one of these stalker or walker cons?
Let's see.
Said you want to be on our podcast on Monday.
I had this one fan who had a professional picture of, you know, they can, you know, get professional pictures done with us. She brought a big candy ring and she wanted me to act like I was proposing to her with her, her big giant candy rock ring. I mean, it's not that crazy, but it was adorable. It was adorable.
All right, Keith, thank you so much for popping on, and we wish you best of luck with season three and all the projects you got going on. And
excellent. Well, thank you.
Anytime you want to come on in the future, you're more than welcome. Thanks so much.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys. Have a good one.
All right, Keith Allen, awesome interview, man. Awesome.
Really
interview.
Cool. Really cool, man. I mean, he gets it. He really gets, I mean, he, the fans, what he's working with. He loves his job. He loves, it seems like he loves just where he's at right now, and that's really cool.
Yeah, man, absolutely. Definitely a cool interview. Makes me want to tune into the show just to see his character a little bit more, you know?
Very sarcastic, very very calculated kind of character, and all. He's got things in the back of his head. He's got plans, so it's a really good show.
He's got heads on the coffee table with beads
in
them.
I forgot to ask him if I can do a cameo, and there's that head guy again. Yeah. He's got zombie heads all over his coffee tables.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think it could work.
All right. But, yeah. So, what'd you do this weekend?
Let's see. This weekend, I pretty much took everything that was in my apartment and threw it away with the girlfriend moving.
Damn it.
It.
You were beating me to it. So, your girlfriend texts us, me and Alex, and takes a picture.
Mm-hmm.
And
she was wondering why you didn't come back, but I see now why you were holding on to it.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's of your living room, I presume, or your dungeon or something. But
living room.
Of the living room. Now, to the left of the picture, I analyzed the picture because I wanted to talk about it on the podcast.
Okay. So
that's why I was kind of doing the what did you do this weekend thing, but you beat me to it. But, you know, there's Michael Burlew stuff. There's the Redskins. There's the NASCAR. There's...
Mm-hmm.
This is kind of like a where's Walt, like I really like analyzed it, but you know those like things you could play at the bars where you have to pick out the differences in the picture, like that's how I was doing.
Where these things don't belong.
I noticed, and first off, on the top shelf was an XFL football.
It was signed by all the different WWE wrestlers at the time of the XFL. That's why I held on to it. It was so cool.
That's awesome. You could probably still find someone who wants that.
Yeah, I had an XFL pennant of the New York, New Jersey Hitmen.
So you were like gung-ho about the new league.
I went to two games. My buddy got season tickets the day they had it out. So we were sitting right next in front of the stripper/cheerleaders that they had there.
Okay.
So we spent the entire time, like we would watch a game and we'd get bored like a quarter way through the game and we would just be doing the dumbest stuff. We'd be asking the cheerleaders to do different things, and one girl could stand on her one leg and bring her leg all the way top to her head, and it was pretty much a glorified strip show.
It's like a basketball. Remember?
Yeah. I remembered like the last game we went to, it was the last game of the season. I kept on telling my buddy, "Yeah, I want to go to another one." He's like, "Well, listen, I got a bunch of friends in line. I can't guarantee you a ticket or anything like that." Like 2 days before the final game, he's like, "Yeah, you still want that ticket?"
I would watch it only if like Vince McMahon was part of every game. Like, "You're fired." The running backs got to like leave the game.
But I remember the last game, like nobody cared. There was like Giants Stadium
that
was,
hit
like,
the wall like 2 weeks in, and it was done.
Yeah, and we were in Giants Stadium. I think there was maybe like 8,000 people in that 50,000 seat stadium. And we were just so bored, so I think the guy's name is Louis Aragus, who was like their punter/kicker.
You should definitely try to find him.
Yeah, and what he was...
It wasn't he Hate Me?
No, it wasn't He Hate Me. We weren't there for the Las Vegas Outlaws. Oh, I'm sorry. But every time he was practicing punting, we would start doing this channel. Like, he would start getting ready, he'd take a step back, and we're like... Oh, and they punted. Oh, and And then all of a sudden, like, 20 people are starting to join in with us. And then it was, like, up to 100 people were just watching the punter practice. And then he got us one time. We went about to go, oh, and they pulled the football away. And we're like, ah, you got us, Louis Agarus.
It sounds about right. Sounds about right for XFL coverage. Hold on, I'm going to...
And then, sadly, after the million-dollar game, the league went away.
What was the million-dollar game?
That was the championship game.
Oh, my God. It was a ladder match.
It was the LA Extreme versus the San Francisco Demons.
Wow. Wow. I'm sorry you experienced that.
I wasn't there. It was in LA. I mean, I watched a little bit of it just for the laughter of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So I see the XFL thing. I see the Redskins stuff. All things I expect. A couple NASCAR things. You know, guy stuff. You were living alone. You know, that's pretty much what guys have. Now, we cruise over to the right side of the picture.
All right.
Let me also like bring this up.
You have to refresh your memory of my place.
No. Like I'd like to, you know, if there's something I'm missing, maybe. so there's the old school TV stand.
Mm-hmm.
Like, those are the ones that like my mom tried to get rid of.
Yeah, the fat tube ones. I never got a new one. I have a flat screen. It's on the top of it.
There's nothing you can do with those. That's what sucks.
No.
And a lot of them were expensive and nice. Like. Back in the day. Oh, I also know, as you move over to the left, you got a nice, like, old school Xbox.
Yeah. Yeah. I got it once, barely played it. I played, what was it, NFL 06 all the time?
Yeah.
The one with Sean Alexander on the cover.
Yeah. Yeah.
The one year he was, like, huge for Seattle.
Yeah. Your Redskins shelf looks a little bit like a shrine. Like, you kind of, like, get on the rug like a Muslim and like, bow down to it every once in a while and go, game! Game!
Oh, Lord, who out there in hog heaven? Heaven be thy name.
Speaking of that, your sport. Yesterday I went out to eat and I was watching, and the Brickyard thing was on the NASCAR.
Brickyard 400.
Oh, my God. First off, they're filming the winner, and they're doing that stupid hat thing that you explained to me, that they take like 9,000 pictures with different hat.
Yeah.
But they're focusing on, what's his name's baby?
Kyle Busch.
Kyle Busch's baby. And the baby's like eating Skittles off the ground.
Off
and
the
everyone's
ground.
Trying to like stop him. And then like... They're kissing the road like 700 times. I'm like, they better, you know, like disinfect that before they.
That's a tradition at the Brickyard.
Right, right.
It was Dale Jarrett in 96, 99, somewhere in that area where he won the race. It wasn't even like televised that part. They did their celebration, so exciting, because it used to be like the hugest thing. Next to Daytona 500 was a Brickyard 400, and he just said one day after they won, he's like, yo, let's go out on the track. There's this little piece of the track which is still bricks, because that's what they originally raced on, and let's kiss the bricks. And they did it, and it just became like a long-running tradition now.
I was laughing, but the kid was cute, but all he wanted was Skittles on the
ground. Dirty-ass Skittles.
It was funny.
Rubber, oil, doesn't matter. These Skittles are great.
God, like, yeah, exactly. Leaking things from the car. But, so then you scroll right over the picture. You got a nice little TV there.
Mm-hmm.
I see underneath you got nice pictures of you and the girl.
Yep, she's the picture taker.
I'm sure she put them there.
Yeah, you know me. I wasn't a picture taker. No, she's 100% picture taker.
She had to throw away the pictures of you and, like, Joe Gibbs and, like, photoshopped pictures.
Get the cardboard cutouts of all the Redskins players, like I have friends.
But then there's this...
Baby, Joe Theismann was my best friend for 6 years.
There's two curious objects.
Okay.
One are, I think they're weights underneath the table. Is that how you keep that body of yours?
Oh, yeah, you know. They stay under the table. That's why I keep the body.
For a second, I thought there were wheels on the table. So you get your dumbbells ready to go at all times. Like you know, you're watching a bad drive for the Redskins. You're going to bust out a set of 25. Then there's a stick of women's deodorant, I believe, on the table.
That's hers.
Yep. Yeah. Sure. And then finally, there's the centerpiece of what I assume is the centerpiece of your living room.
Yeah.
Which is, from the picture, it looks like a glittery, kind of colorful skull with a doctor's hat,
skull cap on there.
Yeah. What the hell's the deal?
Okay. So the head itself, that was at Pier Village. I got that. That was probably like 10, 12 years ago. I'm just walking around. Okay. And there's a glass head, and I'm like, yeah, that could be a decoration.
Wait. Let's slow down.
All right.
You're walking around, and you see a head. Where do you see it? Like on a shelf?
They had glass heads on a shelf.
What store was this?
I guess at Pier 1, is it?
Oh, Pier 1. Pier 1. You said Pier Village. I thought that was Long Branch.
No, sorry, Pier 1. I knew it was one or the other.
Okay, so you were like, wow, you know what my house needs? A head. A glittery head.
Well, that doesn't come with, like, the glittery stuff. It comes empty. It's a see-through glass head.
Even better. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah. So I'm like, well, it'll look silly just, you know, plain see-through, nothing in it. I have to make it a full decoration, so I went into Walmart, and I'm trying to think of what I can do with it, and then I see these, like, bags full of beads and all. They're different colors, and I picked up red and green ones, and I filled up the head, and I put a plate under it, and I turn it around, and I'm like, it kind of looks like a decoration.
So you put a plate under it to really, like, accent the head on your table.
Well, I mean, that's to keep in all the beads. I don't want the beads to fall out.
Oh, so it's open on both sides.
No, just on the bottom side. So on the bottom side where the neck would be, that's where you fill it up. So you put the plate on, and then you turn it around so everything stays put.
Okay, right. So, like, you were like, these beads really go with my head.
My theme.
My head theme that I got going on here.
My collage of manhood.
My Jeffrey Dahmer theme that I got going on in the house.
I wouldn't say a full Jeffrey Dahmer going there.
Not a full, like a half.
A partial. I mean, you never go full Dahmer.
So, no. Now you got your glittery head. Your house is feeling good. It's like, you know, HDTV. That's what we should do, like a little HDTV show. So I decorated the head. Really pulls the room together.
Little Shenanigans Cribs. Yeah, you see my head right there. It's the centerpiece of my place, you know. I don't like to brag.
That head costs $11 total. So you got your head, and you're feeling good. Like, every day you're watching TV where the head looks at you. You got the head. It's got glitter in it, the beads, everything.
It's not really glitter.
It's shiny.
It comes out shiny when you take a picture. It's kind of actually like a dull
kind of dull head.
Yeah.
A dull head. Okay. So the head's there, and you're like, you know, like, it's missing something. Like, this, I got to really pull this head and really decorate it.
Yeah.
And then you decide to put a surgeon's hat.
No, well, here's the deal. That where that came from was India. When I went over for my one trip over to India, we went go-karting. And what we do with go-karting, they give you helmets, but they make you put on one of those surgical caps under the helmet, I guess, to keep it clean, no transfer of diseases or anything like that.
Right.
And when I got back, I noticed it was still on my suitcase, and I'm like, it's kind of sentimental to me just because, you know, that was a cool thing to do out in India. How many people could say they went go-karting in India?
Right.
So I'm just out of the blue. I'm like, let me see if it fits the old, good old head there. Yep. And lo and behold, he did.
Yeah. So you put it on. Now, how many years has that probably been the centerpiece of the living room?
I would probably say a decade.
So a decade of that head.
Yeah.
Like, so nowhere in your mind were you like, man, maybe the head's seen its day. Maybe it's time to update a little bit.
No.
You were going strong with the head.
I mean, it was in the middle of the coffee table. It was kind of standing out. It's a conversation piece. I didn't have a...
No, yeah, conversation piece. What, you and the head, or...
I was very lonely for a while, Scott.
Right. So now the girl enters the picture, and what is her reaction to the head?
Well, I mean, she never said anything to me for, like, quite a while.
She's probably worried she's going to lose hers, and she would be the new centerpiece.
No.
Yeah.
I wouldn't do that to Isabel.
Yeah, you would.
Oh.
Nancy, you're dead.
No, she's not.
Not yet.
She's working tonight.
Yeah.
But once we, like, made it official, okay, we're going to move in, and we're starting to buy things for the apartment, just out of the blue, she's kind of like, oh, and by the way, that's going. That thing is hideous. And I'm kind of looking at her like, what? It's been there longer than you.
I mean, here's what you got to do. If we ever do have a studio of some sort, you have to save that somewhere so it can be like part of the
room. I'm not getting rid of that thing. She wants me to give her. It's like, no, At best, going into storage. So.
Yeah. At best, going in the bathroom, in the shower.
Well, I kept on like silently telling, you know, hey, you know, if we get blah 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 in the bedroom, you know, and we can put that on top of it and the head, and the second you say no, not the head, it's hideous, nobody likes it.
So your suggestion was to bring the head into the bedroom.
Actually, the funny story was she brought it to the attention. I'm like, no, that's. I will say it. That is kind of creepy, you know, and I'm one of those guys, if I'm half asleep and I wake up and I see something, it freaks me out. Mm-hmm. So I can just imagine being half asleep and seeing a head hovering over somewhere in my bedroom.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
You know the whole, like, Berlu is a weird dude, like the character we tried to play.
Yeah, that was, you know, that was just a comedy piece, not based on real life.
No.
Because, you know, not weird.
No, see, that's a little extreme, the head. I have to side with your girlfriend here. You may be a murderer. Fellow comic, got to work with him on an outdoor show at Rocco Romeo's show in Somerset. I thought it was a great show. I loved it. I thought I had a good set. What's cool is, like, I put my phone on a random, like, spot, like up on top somewhere. I get this like crystal clear recording of it, like where you hear like just the right amount of audience, just the right amount of, like, for an outdoor venue. But it was a really cool show. It was one of the ones I was looking forward to all summer. You did it.
Mm-hmm.
We'll talk more about the weekend later. I got a couple of things I did this weekend too. But there's a comic on there, Glenn Tickle. Yes, that's his real name. He's releasing an album, so I said, why don't you pop on for a few minutes and we can help you promote it and see what that's all about. So let's give Glenn a call here.
Let's do it.
And yeah, that's it. Boom, 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 boom. No, that's the
that's Skype, Scott. Yeah. Don't sound weird. We may have to go to our second emergency...
our third string guest, Obi.
Hello, Daddy. I wrote my memoirs today.
I hate you.
Don't talk to your dog about that.
With the passion of a thousand seething suns.
Aw.
You have reached the voicemail box of 908...
I was hoping it would say, Glenn Tickle.
Yeah, me too. Glenn Tickle, here. Here to tickle your fancy.
Glenn Tickle.
That Burles is connected. But yeah, so I'm glad that your girlfriend is enjoying the last few days of her life. And
how so? What, she have some?
Yeah, because it's gonna be her head on the table.
I don't see how.
Remember the other week when we were talking? Like, I think it was two podcasts ago. When we were talking about like what things would she need to know, like moving in with you.
I didn't and think that had to be anything of note.
No.
Well, no. Again, let's keep in mind she's been coming over to my place for about 3 months now, so.
Yeah. She's dead.
Yeah.
So I went to the Red Bulls. Hold on.
On Facebook, he's saying sorry.
You better apologize, Glenn Tickle.
You know who we are.
This is not tickle my fancy.
If so, can you tell more people?
Do you know who we are?
Knocked my phone over.
Yeah, calling Glenn Tickle.
Hello.
Hello, is this Glenn Tickle?
Yes, this is Glenn Tickle.
Is this the late Glenn Tickle?
Yeah. Yeah, the knocked over my phone Glenn Tickle.
Yeah, I want to answer it, and that's knocked it off the table, you idiot.
Everyone says that to us. All yeah, our guests that drop
they,
out
they
on the show.
They see the caller ID verbal shenanigans. Ah!
Like, yuck. Glenn Tickle, welcome to Verbal Shenanigans. This is Scott Brennan here, and this is Mike Berlu there.
Howdy.
And we were just talking about the show we got to do together. Was it Wednesday? Wednesday in Somerville. Yeah. Definitely a fun spot.
It was Somerville, New Jersey.
I was looking forward to that show all summer just because the outdoor thing is kind of different.
Yeah, when Rocco asked me to do it, he led with that it has to be clean, which is fine because I'm almost all my stuff is anyway. But then he's like, and it's outside. Like, that's what I'm more worried about.
Yeah, I was nervous.
Like, I can I can go without swearing. It's just I've done comedy outside a few times, and that's not where comedy is supposed to happen.
Yeah. Like, you get worried about the sound, just travel. Like, I even asked Mike, because he got to do it a couple weeks before. I was like, do you hear the – like, I didn't know if you'd be able to hear the laughter in the back. You know, like, if the sound just dies. And I thought it was great. I had a blast.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. It was a little jarring because there was, like, a 4- and 5-year-old up front and center, just going to town on a fruit bowl, staring at us while we were telling jokes.
But, as you kept saying, I'm Mr. Tickle.
Yeah. Which is – I mean, that's something I have to just do in life anyway. So,
my favorite story from the festival, when somebody talked about, well, how clean you gotta be, and Rocco's example as well. Joe Fernandez headlined one year, and he went to some dark places. It did not go well.
Yeah.
Definitely a fun show. But I've seen you here and there in different shows. But the real reason, very late edition, we actually just message each other like maybe an hour and 15 minutes ago. I said I'll bring you on August 15th, but we had a guest drop out, and here you are. But you have you're doing a comedy album.
Yeah. Sorry, there you cut out.
Yeah. I'm here.
Stop knocking down your phone.
Oh yeah, I didn't. I was knocking down my phone. Hello.
Well, like a fast thunderstorm here.
Oh, thunderstorm. Yeah, they always play thunder, too.
Yeah.
Anyone who doesn't want to talk to us, it's like thunder. But all no, I'm saying you got a comedy album coming out, which is awesome. I mean, like, very soon. You said August 16th, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, August 16th. It's my first one. I just recorded it in May, and then it just got finished, so I'm kind of trying to rush it out before I go on tour in the fall for a bunch of colleges. So,
have you been
16th for the release date?
You've been in stand up for a while, or you like? Because like I see you, I see you as a young guy. I'm like, wow, he's got an album. How many years?
8.
Oh wow. Okay. Yeah, then it's definitely worth doing.
Yeah, it's weird because like I live in New Jersey. I do stuff in New York pretty regularly, but if you're not in New York or LA, it's hard to get anybody to pay attention to anything you're doing, which is part of the reason I wanted to have the album, because it's just like a thing I can send out to people as evidence that, you know, I do comedy and, you know, can do it for an hour without sounding like I'm just winging it or stretching. Which is important because now, like, I'm doing college shows where I'm having schools pay me to come do an hour. Actually, that's the main reason. Like, the day I decided to record the album was I was talking to a school about booking me, and they're like, "Oh, well, send us the hour that you would do at the school." I'm like, "Oh, I don't have that. Like, I don't have an hour or like that I can just email you a link to." But then a couple days after that, I got asked to headline a show in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, and I'm like, sure, if I can record it and do an album, I would love to do that. And it was at SteelSax in Bethlehem, where I've done shows a bunch. The guy who runs comedy over there, Ryan Hill, is a friend of mine. He was running the open mic that I started at.
Nice.
Oh, so many years ago. So it felt good to be able to do it there.
So when you recorded the album, what did you do, like a bigger room, or just like was a tight like small room? Or
it's in a movie theater where we recorded it.
Nice.
The original plan, because they have two theaters there, one's 200 seats, one's 100 seats. Plan originally was to do two shows in the 100 seat theater, but then out of nowhere, some high school in the Bronx bought 100 tickets to the show. So we had to move it to the bigger theater, and I could get a decent crowd two times in the smaller theater, but I wouldn't be able to fill the 200 seat theater twice. So we just did one in there, and thankfully, like, they were a great crowd. We were worried because it's a bunch of high school students who may or may not have ever really listened to comedy before.
Right.
but they were great, so it worked out.
So, like, how long is the CD? Or the album, I should say. CD, God. Dating myself
yeah,
now.
How long is the 8-track?
Yeah.
How long is each side of the record?
So I walk into the bar, turn to side two.
Right, yeah.
I had a couple people asking me if I was going to release it on vinyl.
Vinyl's big, man. Vinyl is not a bad idea. If you can get a decent vinyl deal, you could do like the, what's the small, like the 7-inch or whatever?
Yeah.
Little, like, the vinyl is really big. And you can get them.
Jonah Ray did his first EP, like, years ago on, like, a little 7-inch vinyl. But now the problem is because it's so popular, there's, like, huge production delays.
Yeah.
They're trying to get it, and it's not a cheap option at all.
No, not at all. Well, even, like, if you go to, like, Record Store Day for albums and stuff like that, you're buying, like, a more expensive piece. There's usually some kind of incentive, but, you know, you're getting... The vinyl itself is expensive nowadays, but it's also... It's more of like a... I don't know. If you really support a band, it's, like, a cool way to, like, have something of theirs. Like me, when I was going through a divorce and selling my house, I had to sell my vinyl. My Stadium Arcadium vinyl set is somewhere floating around on eBay somewhere. It's gone now, but sucks.
Yeah, I bought them all. They're really great. Collection. Sorry, can't bring them over anymore.
Yeah.
I inherited a bunch of stuff from my grandparents, and it's like mostly just like big band stuff or whatever was popular
like Glenn Miller.
That people listen to. And there's like some, but there's like a few good ones. So I'm like, oh, like we should get a record player so we can at least listen to these a couple of times. So we'll do the same thing. Like Harvey Danger re-released their first album last year on vinyl, and so we picked that up because
it's cool.
They've been my favorite band since high school.
Yeah, I don't know, vinyl. There's something to it. There's something like cool about putting that needle down on it. That people go crazy about the sound. I'm not exactly sure that exists. I think it really depends on actually your speakers and your tuner and all that. But there is something like cool about the record spinning in the room that you're in, and it's going in the grooves. And I don't know, there is something cool about vinyl.
Even but just the sound of putting that needle down and hearing that little scratch before it starts.
Yeah, every album I've listened to at least once. But what's nice is that now if you buy an album on vinyl, you also get a digital copy.
Right,
which is how I would actually listen to them most of the time.
Yeah, well, nowadays, like the vinyl, that you get beautiful. All the artwork is nice and large. You know what I mean? Like the booklets are large, and they usually, like the vinyl, they put a little extra into it. So, and
it's worth it if you're a fan of that band.
I'm a little nostalgic. I still love. If it's a band I love, looking at the album, back to when I was a kid, like that was the best thing. Was like looking through the album, like reading the lyrics and looking at the pictures. And I don't know, I kind of missed that a little bit. Like you don't get that with, you know, singles and whatnot. But I don't know, vinyl is cool. Like vinyl, like tapes were, cassettes were definitely not an advancement. Because you had to fast forward or rewind. Vinyl, you could at least skip ahead. Like vinyl and CDs are cool. Tape just sucked.
Tape was big when I was a little kid, and then like as I was kind of becoming a teenager and getting more into music and stuff, that was the switch to CDs. And I just remember my friend got Aerosmith's Big One on CD. That was his first CD.
I had the tape version of that one.
Columbia House or whatever. And we were just so amazed that you could skip to the next song.
Oh man, Columbia House, ten CDs for a penny, and then if you don't cancel, it's like $27 a month. You're like, damn it, Columbia House!
My sister got in so much trouble for it.
Like so many others got in a lot of trouble.
Remember, you had to had the like little tab ones, like you punch the tabs out on the CDs that you want. Like it would be like a sheet that they give you.
Yeah.
Oh man,
they made it as hard as possible for everyone.
But vinyl would be cool. But
I know Josh Gondelman put his album out. It's on CD and digital as well. But he put it on cassettes.
Yeah,
as like a cool thing
on cassette.
I've heard him talk about it where he's like, "Oh yeah, like it was cool because when I was a kid, like we would drive around, listen to tapes in the car."
Yeah. Best thing about cassettes was that you could record on them. That was always cool. because I would like wait for that song on the radio that I wanted and hit play and record to get
it. Oh yeah,
you know, like, and then I've told this story in the podcast before, but like me and my buddy used to do fake radio shows and like record our own thing and put tape over the top of the tape so you could record onto it like live. It was, you know, a little crazy, but
we used to do that for a high school assignment. We had to do a radio play version of Mice and Men that
wow.
I haven't listened to since
were
like
you the rabbit
high school. I don't even remember. I just remember my
no Lenny no
had to. He had the line, "You're in deep poo, little mister," and it was that's probably the funniest thing I've ever been a part of.
Well, if you find that tape, you're more than welcome to come back on and we play it and analyze it.
I'll have to see if anyone still has it around. I recently found a video that I made for health class about how to treat head injuries. it was one of those things where like it was so funny to us at the time, but looking back 15 years later or however long I've been out of high school, it didn't quite hold up.
But
I'm pretty sure that of Mice and Men thing is still, that's just timeless.
So Glenn, you put out the album, it's coming out. It's got to feel pretty cool. Like, I listen to all sorts of comedians podcasts and like, they're all, you know, all the bigger comedians, they're always working towards putting out that hour. And, you know, once that hour's out, like killing that material and starting over, is that something you're looking to do? Or because you're like, you know, the average guy, are you going to still use that material and keep moving? Is this more of a promotional tool? Like, what is your goal for the CD? God damn it, the album.
I mean, I am putting it out on CD, so you're not wrong. It's, I think
can you burn me a copy, bro?
No, I have two friends who I won't name, but one of them, like, they both just recorded an album, and one of them, like, released it the next day. Like, he recorded it, went home, like, played around in GarageBand or whatever, and then just started burning CDs. And then the other one is, like, going through a label, and he has, like, not a great deal. Like, he explained it. Like, I'm putting it out myself. He explained his deal. I'm like, oh, you shouldn't have agreed to that. Like, that's no good.
Right.
Because he has to, like, buy a bunch in advance as part of his deal. And I'm like,
I know someone who has something similar to that, too, actually.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure, like, it's... I don't want to say he got ripped off, but I also don't want to, like, name him or the album in this story, because I feel like he might be getting a little ripped off. But, a big part of it was... I've been doing this comedy for almost 8 years, and, like, some of the jokes that I put on the album are ones that I wrote 8 years ago. Like, I included literally the first joke that I wrote in a notebook after I decided to do an open mic, as part of like a larger bit where I talk about that. But some of them, I like them. Like, I do jokes about how I used to be a substitute teacher. Like, I did them on that show
on
Wednesday, but I haven't been a substitute teacher for like 5 years. So I still like those jokes and they work, but I'm kind of tired of it. So instead of just not doing those jokes ever again, it made sense to record them. I'm like, I put a lot of work into this stupid joke where I explained to a toddler why the sky is blue. Like, I don't want to just throw it away.
Yeah, that was a good joke.
Hardly he used that in some.
Yeah, but then the other thing is I'm doing a bunch of colleges, and like those jokes work at colleges because they all had substitute teachers until very recently.
Mm-hmm.
So like I'll do those jokes there. Especially because, like, not a lot of people are going to buy this album where, like, Louis C.K. will do an hour and then throw that hour out because a lot of people will see those jokes, whereas my audience, much smaller, where if I do a show, like, people aren't coming to see me. They're kind of coming to see the idea of comedy at this point.
So you're going out on a limb and saying your audience is smaller than Louis C.K.'s.
Yeah.
I'll want to get a count of that.
I haven't run the numbers. Like, I don't have the math in front of me, but...
The spreadsheet? I'm
slightly less buzz about me.
Well, why don't we compare ratings of your FX show with his?
Right.
Maybe you win that battle.
That's true. Yeah.
I do a online cooking show with my three-year-old that...
Oh, that's cool.
I mean, it's probably close to what numbers Louis was putting up on FX.
Yeah, naturally.
you know, it's that big YouTube following. I think the most popular one has like 1,500 views or something, equally unimpressive.
Nice.
But it's fun to try to do a cooking show with a 3-year-old who doesn't always want to cooperate. 100%.
I was talking to my buddy today, another comedian. We were walking our dogs and whatnot, and we were talking like, you know, like we both come from like a TV video background. We're like, you know, back then the only excuse for putting out stuff was for not putting out stuff was, you know, like, oh, I can't get a deal or no one's going to finance that. Dude, nowadays there's really no excuse besides laziness. If you want to put it out, you have the ability to even film something, a crappier version of something on your phone. Like, the only excuse is laziness. That's it. You could put it out and no one, a lot of people don't even care about quality anymore. It's more like if the content, it's content, man. If you could just keep blasting out content, you know, like, that's what people want.
Yeah, and with the album, like I said, I'm putting it out myself, which is super easy to do. Like, I hired a sound guy to come up and record it, who I've worked with on film stuff before. He's never recorded a comedy album, but he's recorded, like, live concerts and stuff, and I'm familiar with his other work, so I was confident in his ability to record me talking into a microphone in front of people.
Right.
But I paid him to come up and do it, but then the money from the show that I set up to record paid him, and then releasing something digitally is essentially free anymore. Like, you can do it for zero money, and you can do it and get it on, like, iTunes and everything for, like, $20. Like, it's really, it's super cheap.
Mm-hmm.
Getting CDs made up is still
a
little expensive, because you have to kind of get a lot of them for it to be worth it.
Yeah, man.
Which is the reason I'm doing the pre-order, is because then that money is going to cover getting the CDs made up.
Yeah. So, like, give us all the info, man. We're running up on the mark here. Give us all the info, where we get it, how much it's going to cost, when it's coming out, where we can find you, your social security number, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. My site's just glentickle.com. I also snatched glentickle as one word up on any new social media sites that pop up, because there's two other glentickles in the world.
Wow. And poor two guys.
Yeah, yeah, that one guy's in a jail in Florida. You really don't want to listen to his CD.
Yeah, I've talked to them. I used to host a talk show, and I tried to get them both on as guests. One guy, the one that lives in Florida, and he's like an investment banker or whatever, and had like a real job and didn't really understand my interest in him. He was polite, but he's like, oh, I don't want to do that. And then the other guy agreed, but then we couldn't work out today or whatever. He's in a band in Virginia. But yeah, I always try to beat them to whatever social media thing so that I can get Glenn Tickle as one word as the username. So I think on everything but MySpace, if the username is Glenn Tickle, that is me and not an Australian banker or the other Glenn Tickle who's in a band in Virginia.
So either way, you get entertainment no matter what Glenn Tickle you find.
Yeah. And the main area I'm releasing it through is through Bandcamp. So if you go to glenntickle.bandcamp.com, it's on there currently to pre-order. You can pre-order the CD, which will help me actually make the CDs. Or digitally, it's on there both ways. I think today it went up for pre-order on Amazon digitally.
Nice.
And it'll, when it's released, like, it'll be wherever people buy or listen to
music,
comedy or music, it'll be on there.
Sounds good.
I think it's going to be on Tidal. Like, that was an option I had, so I'm like, sure, I'll release it on Tidal.
You didn't want to call it Tickle Torture?
No, I went with Yes Really, because it's a line that comes up a couple of times in jokes, and also when I started telling people I was going to record and release the comedy album, they didn't necessarily believe me, or they're like, why? What are you doing? You're not anybody. But like I said, it's like, I've talked to some other comedians who have been thinking about it. I'm like, there's really no reason
not to do it.
Like, you need a certain level of confidence in your material and your ability to do comedy for an hour, but other than that, like,
yeah, you gotta take a bet on yourself once in a while.
Yeah, like, worst case scenario is nobody buys this and I'm down like a couple hundred bucks from promotion and whatever, and I released like a not great comedy album. I like it. I think it's good. But if you listen to like a lot of comedians' first albums, like they get better. I was talking to one of my friends was thinking about doing it, and he's like, I don't know. He's like, I don't know if my stuff's good enough. He's like, I want to make sure it's perfect. I'm like, no, don't. Like, just release something good. That's better than not releasing anything.
Yeah, it's funny because
I know,
like,
that sounds like I'm talking down.
No,
my album,
it's funny because I was in bands my entire life, like a bunch of bands. And all we wanted to do was release stuff. And now, like, being, you know, like a comic, I'm so doubtful. Like, back then, I would put out shitty music no matter what. Any way we can get it out there, it's like, here's our music, here's our music, here's our music. Now I'm like, oh, man, I don't want my parents to see me, my friend. You know, like,
I stumbled on that one line 8 minutes in.
Yeah.
Weird. It's a weird difference. But, Glenn, thanks so much for coming on. And, hopefully,
yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, anytime. Like I said, after this is all out, you can always come sit in or call in or whatnot. And I'm glad we could help you out a little bit. And it's been a pleasure, man.
Awesome. I'll see you around here.
Absolutely.
Thank you, man.
Bye.
Later. So that was Mr. Glenn Tickle.
Good for him, man, getting out an album.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was thinking, like, I was sitting back on that guy he talked about. He signed a deal for an album, and he couldn't get out of it, and there was a lot of troubles and stuff. All I can think about is this, like, open mic comedy guy being held by his legs out off of a hotel balcony by Suge Knight, you know. Yeah. Suge, no! You're going to do that comedy. You're going to do it for Suge.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, good for him getting out. Like, it's funny, because, like, well, the whole day, like, I was walking with Joe today out in the woods, and it was hot as hell. And we got
it's nasty.
It's even funny. Like, we went to a stream, and my dog just like plops his cock and stomach in the stream. Like, as soon as we get there and lays in there, like it's I don't know. But anyway, he was talking about, like, he's been doing comedy probably 12 years now, and he's like, we went and looked at a venue over in Randolph for like to shoot his. He wants to do like a special, and like he's been back and forth for the last like 3 years. I'm like, just do it, man. Just what's the worst that can happen? Like, he can have access to all the cameras and stuff because he works at the TV station. We went over to the music den in Randolph because I was like, that's a good room, man, to film some.
No.
Well, I almost did it last night. Saturday night. I thought about going over there and doing a spot, but I didn't. But I said, the music den is a beautiful room. We went over there. It's only $375 to rent it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Beautiful room. So I said, maybe I'll do freaking just run a stand-up show there, you know, like maybe find someone who can draw. But anyway, it's like, yeah, he's been doing it maybe twice as long as this guy, and you know, he's thinking about, he's still up in the air about recording something. Just do it, time stamp that, you know, like, who cares if you make $5 off of it, you know, like, it's time stamped, you did it, you know, when you show your grandkids it, you know, like, I don't know.
That's the thing about comedy. I mean, you come off a stage, you can feel absolutely great, and then somebody's like, well, why don't you do this? I don't know, man. I don't know if I got the stuff. I got this. I got that. I got a solid XYZ, but I don't really can stretch that long.
Blah, blah. I think it's always self-doubt. That's the problem. It's always like, nah, this ain't good enough. This ain't good enough. But it's, I don't know. But yeah, that's Glenn, too. So I went to the, I guess I'll get into this now. I went to the Red Bulls NYCFC game. I started with a bunch of coaches. Fun game. Red Bulls won, which is good. And
4-1, that was a big one.
Yeah. But what's hilarious is, like, we're sitting next to the NYCFC supporters section.
Oh.
Which is fine. Like, I don't care. But NYCFC has been around for a year and a half.
Correct.
The way the people were acting is like this is some kind of like 120-year rivalry.
Tradition, yeah.
They were, there was fights everywhere. One guy got tossed out because when the NYC scored, he threw beer all over us, like took a whole beer and like tossed it everywhere. I didn't even have a Red Bulls jersey on. None of us really. I went with six other soccer coaches, so we were just like analyzing the game. He's tossing beer everywhere. You know, the beer is like $13. I mean, you just throw $11 into the air. And it's just like they're chanting, getting into fights. The one guy is like, there was a fight between the security guards and NYCFC fans, which was funny. They had the security was dragging the security guard away from the fans because I guess they riled him up, and there's like two or three of them. Then one of them was saying his wife got assaulted. I'm like, a lot of these guys have never watched the game before. They just want to get drunk and fight and chant and yell. It's like, it's kind of embarrassing. Like, it's not Liverpool Everton or Man United Liverpool or something like that. Like, where there's rivalry building for years.
They've
Red
had
Sox, Yankees,
thousands of matches together, and they've had rivalries, and one team has stole a championship from the other, and there's been huge fights. And
or
blah,
one
blah,
team's
blah.
Been terrible. Now they're good. Like,
I think NYCFC lost 7-0 to them earlier this year.
I don't know. And then, like, they were down 4-1, and they're chanting, "We're in first place." It's like, basically, they had, like, a list of chants, like, if this happens, we're going to do this. If this happens, we're going to say this. Like, it was, like, embarrassing, dude. It was, like, so many fights, and it's like, dude, it's like, if they put it on the board, like, all-time record against each other, 2-1, you know, like, it's like, ew. I don't know, it was frustrating, but it was a good game. And
it's weird, the entire time you said that story, if you replaced NYCFC with Philadelphia Union, I wouldn't have been surprised.
Yeah, the Union, well, we all know they would fight no matter what.
Yeah,
but
a good crowd down there in Chester, PA. Don't mock a Dupe Nation, as they're called.
What are they called?
Dupe Nation. D-O-O-P.
Why?
I'll have to Google that. I don't follow it that well, but I do know that's anything they put on Twitter. And Union's going to play the Seattle Sounders. Hashtag dupe.
Because if you follow a Philadelphia team, you've been duped into believing they're going to be good.
Aren't you adorable? How's third place dealing for you?
That's all right. Don't worry about the Mets. Don't worry. We're going to have our run here, and we're going to be right in the thick of things. It's going to be us and the Cubs. Don't you worry. Mm-hmm. And if the Cubs don't win... They have to win now, as far as...
Oh, they better. Did they get Chapman officially?
Yeah.
Okay.
Today.
Yeah, they don't do it.
Exactly.
That goat was a mofo.
Yeah. I mean, they are loaded. Let's go to Bear News, baby. Here, check this out.
Bear News! We're talking about bear and shit. We're talking about bear and shit. It's freaking Bear News! Bears in the world doing all sorts of things. Yeah, girl. You know I like them bears and shit.
You want to hear one more time? Just
yeah, why not?
New?
We're talking about bears and shit. We're talking about bears and shit. It's freaking bear news. Bears in the world doing all sorts of things.
Like, I just see in that one part where you just, like, rip open your shirt where you... Yo, bear news!
This is my favorite part right here.
All
right. This is right here.
You know I like them bears, man.
So, yeah, that's the theme song to Bear News, buddy.
Oh, all right.
A recurring segment on the show. We've got three bear stories.
Ooh.
Three brand new bear stories. Some of them are sad, man. The world's saddest polar bear kept in a Chinese shopping center. Okay.
So they keep a polar bear in like a Sears?
Yeah. In a recent note, activist group PETA described the animal's habitat as overcrowded, artificial, and sparse. The aquarium displays 500 species, including 2 polar bears, 5 walrus calves, 6 young beluga whales, and 2 Arctic wolves. Okay. Grand View Aquarium, described as the world's saddest zoo, continues to draw attention as hundreds of thousands of activists petition its operator to release the animals and close up shop for good. The aquarium opened up in the Grand View Mall, so it's in a mall, China, on January 9th. It came under fire immediately. Critics say the facility provides animals, including 2 polar bears, with little shelter and reprieve. Animal rights group Animal Asia, for example, has described spectators banging on polar bear's glass enclosure and shouting at it in order to take selfies. There's no.
Hey, I can't find you. Are you by the Spencer Gifts? No, man, I'm pissing off a bear.
I'm by the bear, make a left, and by the Hot Topic.
I don't see you. Did you make a left at the gorilla? I told you bear.
Yeah. There's the food court, then the bear.
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't know. It's just sad. Like, I mean, at this point in society, aren't we done with zoos, I think?
Like, yeah, it's hard to say. I mean, some of them are done well. I mean,
what's the step up? Is the not zoos? It's
safari.
No, Mike Bro, not where you go.
No, like kind of like Great Adventure Safari, like to drive it where you have a full element of the outdoors.
But what's that called? Where they reintroduce people, animals into the wild that are injured or orphaned? Oh. What is that called? Like a refuge?
Yeah. Okay.
That's all right. But, like, aren't we past, like, the animals in the cages, like monkeys and freaking lions and stuff like that? It's like, we got to get past that.
We're getting pretty close. I mean, you look at it, Ringling Brothers, they gave up the elephants. Six Flags, they had dolphins and what was the other? I think they had the seals, they gave that up.
SeaWorld got rid of the whales.
Whales, yeah.
So, that's what I'm saying. Aren't we past that? Like, aren't we past... Did you see that woman who got ripped a tiger just grabbed her at some kind of safari in China or something like that? She was having an argument. She got it out of the car, and a freaking tiger just comes in. It's like gone, dead. Snatches her out of the freaking... Well,
the husband's like, are you sure you don't want to get back in the car?
Yeah. So
you really hate my head sculpture?
Livestock killing bear. Okay. Livestock killing bear euthanized. Right?
Okay.
On Saturday, July 23rd, 2016, the Idaho Department of Fish and Game, with the permission of the United States Fish and Wildlife Service, euthanized a 26-year-old adult male grizzly bear that had been responsible over the past week for killing 7 sheep in 3 separate incidents in Moose Creek. The grizzly bear was originally trapped for scientific purposes 23 years ago and had not been known to have been in any human-related conflicts until this incident. When first trapped, it was designated as number 219. Today, over 1,000 bears have been trapped for scientific purposes. Examination of the bear, once sedated, indicated that it had totally lost its upper teeth, and its lower ones were also in very bad shape, explaining why it had turned to running down sheep.
Yeah, they're less chewy sheep, so yeah. You can gum a sheep.
Which is amazing that I could release you and say, bro, go kill that sheep, and you probably couldn't do it. This guy is, this poor bear, the sheep, you know, he eats the sheep, which is frightening that this bear lost most of his teeth and can still just take down sheep like it's nothing, which is why everyone messes with wildlife. They want to keep them in their cages and this and that, and then they snatch up a couple things and all of a sudden we got to put them down.
Yep.
Leave them alone. And they'll be fine. And then we're looking at a picture here. The bear has, like, no teeth, man.
He gummed a sheep.
What do you think that breath smells like? There's no top teeth, basically.
No, it can't be pleasant. I mean, there's no way you go put a sniff in there. Peppermint.
Yeah. I feel bad for the bear. I mean, you know, he ate sheep because he had to eat. That's what it always comes to. He had to eat.
They don't know any better. They're wild animals. What do you expect? They see sheep. He knows he's in pain. He knows he really can't chew down on anything. He's not going to go after, you know, like a mountain lion or something like that that's going to attack him back. So. Yeah.
And it's interesting. He said... the bear, when interviewed, said, I didn't even like the taste of the sheep. They were bad.
Oh, is that on Tickle's new album? Is it?
I'm sorry, everybody. I'm sorry. I couldn't resist. Couldn't resist. This is my favorite one. Bear News, Part 3.
Bear News.
Man rescued a bear from the jaws of the cheese puff bucket. Cheese puff bucket.
Well, you got my attention.
Yes. So some quick thinking and a sturdy rope saved the young black bear in Glenwood Springs, Colorado, from certain death this week. The 2-year-old bear had its head stuck in an empty bucket of cheese puffs and could not free itself, meaning it also couldn't eat, said Perry Will, area wildlife manager with Colorado Parks and Wildlife. But as area residents spotted the bear and notified wildlife officials, the critter always scurried away before help could arrive. Then Jim Hawkins, 66, took matters into his own hands. He resolved to wrestle the bear and attempt to free it from the cheese puff bucket of doom. He essentially looked like he had a space helmet on. I decided the only way we saved this bear's life was to keep him in one place until the wildlife officers arrived. He left a pair of work clothes and some rope in a convenient place and waited. On Wednesday, a resident saw the bear walking on the side of the road a few miles away and alerted local authorities. But the bear changed course and walked right through a bed and breakfast backyard. Now was the time to act. Then it was like a kind of rodeo for a while. Until that, the bear realized it had a better chance of getting away by attacking its rope-pulling adversary. The rope Hawkins held went slack, and the bear came charging at him full tilt, its bucket leading the way. The two rolled on the ground for several minutes until the bear ran up a tree and Hawkins tied the rest of the rope to the trunk. He then stitched it for some of the wounds his forearms suffered. I thought he could see very well out of the jar, but once he started coming at me, I could sure tell he knew where he was going. Finally, Hawkins called authorities. Fortunately, the bear's teeth were blocked off by the cheese puff container. Colorado Parks and Wildlife officials tranquilized the bear and lowered him to the ground. They removed the cheese puff jar and relocated the bear in a less populated area 12 miles away. All in the day's work, said Hawkins, a retired firefighter and a current amateur folk singer.
So I guess in the long run, the deadliest animal is not bear, it's just a cheetah.
Look at that. Oh, boo.
That was that was better than
that was
your
up there
sheep
with my
one.
Sheep joke. Look at the picture of the bear with the cheese puff container. There's another one.
He was enjoying himself for like the first 5 minutes of that excursion. You know, he's just walking around the woods. He smells it. He dips his face in. He's licking away. He's having the time of his life. And then
there he is, lying on the ground with the cheese puff container on his head. But this story has a happy ending. He survived. Mm.
Like how some guy saw it and he's like, gotta wrestle it. He's like, rips off his shirt. Harold, don't do it. Gotta wrestle the bear.
Gotta save that bear.
Cheese curd bucket.
He's got cheese puffs. But imagine, it probably looks like some kind of space bear.
Yeah.
Like walking through the woods.
Some there. Russian walks by. Damn, those Americans are beating us again.
Space race.
Space bear.
Cocaine bear. Now we have space bear. So again, that is bear news.
Bear news. We're talking about bear and shit. We're talking about bear and shit. It's freaking bear news. Bears in the world doing all sorts of things. Yeah, girl. You know I like them bears and shit.
So, enjoying your time off there, Scotty?
Yes, yes, yes. When you're alone, these are the types of things that happen. But yeah, that's bear news for today.
You could have read a book. No, you did a disco bear song.
I'm thinking about making bear news a YouTube segment. All these stories, just doing like a quick thing where there's like lots of pop-ups.
Hi, I'm Scott Brennan, and this is bear news.
Exactly.
Bear news.
Bear news. Same song. Talking about bears and shit. But go ahead, Burl. Anything left?
I don't have anything left. Are we going to promotions?
Yes, we're going to go to promotions.
All right. Then I don't really have anything on my side. I'll say... Facebook.com/TheBurl721, my comedy page. But I'd like to thank Matt S. Carroll, Emily Ann Lickley, Catherine Scalzo, Destiny Grove, Andrew Timms, and Kate McMullen with some of the fan questions for our great guests.
Was awesome, man. That was great. To keep taking your fan questions for sure, and it definitely makes the podcast a lot better.
All right, we're looking for questions for the mustache champion. Anyone for Gandhi Jones?
The Rinster. The Rinster. Shut up, Obi. So I'm going to promote the Verbal Shenanigans comedy show in a new room, different type of show, free room. It's free. Coming out September 1st. Tap House 15 in Jefferson, New Jersey. Joe Fernandez headlining, KP Burke, Mike Ciccoli, and Jackie Byrne on the show, and I will be hosting. And that's about it, man. That's about it.
Great show this week.
Yeah, absolutely a great show. And thank Glenn Tickle and Keith Allen and all that fun stuff.
And me.
As I'm trying to kill time until the advertisement for the song comes.
Chris Young World Tour, oh, everybody. Man.
It's one of those like 30-second advertisements. Oh, this is brutal right
and
now.
And if you recycle it, they'll put the minute-long one on.
Yeah, oh, man. This is brutal. I'd like to thank Michael Berlow's head on the shelf. And I would also like to send my condolences to his girlfriend for her last week alive in the Berlow apartment.
Oh, I wouldn't say
thank
that.
You, Izzy. It was nice knowing you.
At least keep her around for a few weeks. Okay, you now it's buffering.
You got to plan a burial spot, right?
Well, I'm
goodbye, everybody. I think we ended with this once before.
I don't remember which episode.
I don't know. Probably something when you were talking about Walking Dead.
Yeah. Why don't you all listen to every single episode and tell us which one it ended on? And you can win a fabulous Verbal Shenanigans t-shirt.
That's it, correct. But please, what really helps us most is going to iTunes and leaving us a review and subscribing to the podcast. And that's about it. We got a lot more content coming up.
Mm-hmm. Manskirt next week.
The Manskirt next week, and we'll see you soon. We love you. Keep doing that at your back. Life is funny. Laugh at it. Go Thank Zombies. You,